know, the month of May is sort of a month of memories. We had Mother's Day just recently, to second Sunday of this month, to remember our mothers. And then tomorrow will be a big holiday, Memorial Day, where we remember all of those who have gone before us and given their lives for us, that we have our freedom that we talked about during Sunday school class today. Freedom in this country, not freedom as far as our Christianity is concerned, but freedom from fear of man. But we're beginning to wonder if we're going to be able to keep that freedom or not that we have in our country. But I like to think of all the men who have gone before us and women who gave their lives so that we can have freedom to live in this country. And if you go down to Ringgold this time of year, you'll see flags all over the whole city of Ringgold, and every one of those flags represents a soldier who has given his life for us, and we ought to appreciate that. But I want to talk a little bit different about one group of people that gets sort of left out in our memories. I mentioned already that May is the month with its second Sundays whenever we took time to think about our mothers, and mothers are important. There's some very important mothers in the Bible. You know, you start with Eve all the way back to the book of Genesis. And the name Eve means living. That's why she's called the mother of all the living. She was the first mom that ever lived on the face of this earth. And Adam, her husband, you remember he was made from dirt. I don't understand this. I just know from reading the scripture this is what happened. That God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and God took a rib out of the side of Adam, and he took that bone and made out of that bone a woman. Now, how you can do that, I don't know, but man, you know, was made out of dirt, and in a way, woman was too, but it doesn't say anything that he just used a clod of dirt to make a woman. I don't know how all that happened, but a bone is dirt too. But anyway, it seems like woman had something special about her, and whenever God brought her to the man after he had created her, man said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." And then that meant that they were now united together as one whenever they unite together in marriage. And, you know, there's something special about the bond between a man and a woman, that they're one flesh, so to speak. Oh, I know they're two different people, but when they come together in marriage, they're one flesh. It makes them very important. And then another famous mom, you remember, was Sarah. And I guess if you started trying to pick the moms in the Bible, you know, the three most important, one of them would be Eve, and then the other would be Sarah, Abraham's wife. You know, Abraham's wife couldn't have children for some reason, and then God told Abraham that she was going to have a child, and Sarah even laughed about it. How can I? You know, I'm past the age of having children. In fact, she was 90 years old when she finally had Isaac, but it happened just like God said it would happen. And then dropping on down to the New Testament, you know, in that group of three that you might refer to them as Mary, the mother of Jesus. And, of course, her baby, Jesus, was conceived through a miracle just like Sarah's baby was. So those were all sort of miracle, those two were sort of miracle babies. And we could spend, you know, the rest of the morning and still some more talking about mothers. And mothers are important. And we need to think about them and remember them and honor our mothers because, you know, with a lot of us, Mother's Day is a memorial day too, because I, and most of you, probably don't have your mothers to go eat lunch with today. The only thing you can do is just remember your mothers and honor their mothers because they've died and gone on before. But I want to tell you a story this morning. It's a Bible story. And it involves a mother, but in a little different way from what you normally think about mothers. But this story begins with a man called Elimelech. Elimelech was an Ephrathite. He lived in the land of Ephrathah. Now, that was really the first name of Bethlehem, but Bethlehem, the city of Bethlehem, is within the area of that now. But being an Ephrathite made him sort of an aristocrat in the city. He was an important person. But Elimelech, there was a famine in Judea, and this was during the time of the judges now. There was a famine in Bethlehem of Judea, and he decided that he would take his family, his wife and his two sons, and he would move west to another country called Moab. Now, you've probably heard of the Moabites, and there was always conflict between the Moabites and Israel, but he thought things were going to be better over in Moab than they were in Bethlehem. And so he decided to take his family and move over there. But you know, things didn't turn out in the country of Moab just like he thought they would. And by the way, do you remember how Moab got its name, the country of Moab? Well, it was named after a man. Do you remember the man Moab, who he really was? Well, if you stop and think about it for a minute, you remember Lot and Abraham, you remember that story, and how Lot, you know, moved toward Sodom and Gomorrah when he and Abraham separated. And then God started talking to Abraham about how he was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And you know how Abraham pleaded with God to try to find at least 10 people that were righteous, but he couldn't find even 10. And so God told Abraham he was going to destroy and sent two angels to tell Lot and his wife and family to get out of town and don't even look back. Well, you remember what happened with Lot's wife when she looked back, turned to a pillar of salt. And then later on, after this, Lot and his two daughters are now without a mama. And so the two daughters got to thinking about, well, you know, there's not going to be any children to grow up and carry on the name of Lot. So they devised a scheme whereby they would get Lot drunk and cause Lot to have a relationship with them so that they conceived and bare children. And each of them, the older first and then the younger daughter, the next night did the same thing with their dad. And they both conceived, and the oldest one's son was named Moab. So all of these Moabites were descendants, really, of Lot and an incestuous relationship that Lot had with his daughters. And the Ammonites were descendants of Lot as well, from the youngest daughter's son, Amnon. So anyway, that's how the Ammonites and Moabites got started. But Moab wasn't a land of opportunity like Elimelech thought it was going to be. I don't know exactly how long that Elimelech and his family had lived in the country of Moab until Lot died. And Lot's wife, which is a name you remember, was Naomi. And Naomi was left with just her two sons. And then her two sons decided to marry Moabite girls. And all we know for sure is that they lived together for 10 years. And sometime after that, I don't know how long because we're not told, but sometime after that, the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, with the two boys, both died. So here, Naomi is left with two girls, Orpah and Ruth. These two girls are foreigners. They're Moabite girls. And so with all of this, Naomi's life has just been turned upside down. You know, a mother's life is not always a bowl of cherries. It's sort of like Irma Brombeck. I think she was the one that said it in her newspaper article that she used to write in the newspaper. She said, if life is a bowl of cherries, how come I got all the pits? Well, I think in this situation, Naomi had gotten all the pits, left alone, a stranger in a foreign land. Now, think what it would be like to you if you were in a foreign country and you had no family. They're all dead. They're gone. Nobody to really associate with like you want to, because you just don't have any people that are like you. And even your two daughters, they've been part of a country where they worshiped other gods. You know, soon I moved to Nashville back in 1961. We didn't know anybody up here. And it wasn't long, though, till we had friends, because we went to church together and found friends that we hadn't known before. Well, I'll take that back. We did know one family up here, James Watkins. And we happened to start the church where James Watkins was preaching here in Nashville. But anyway, it's sort of a very sad situation. And, you know, Ruth at that time was, you know, you could say, as Romans 8:28 says, you know, all things work together for good to those who love the Lord. Ruth would have said, don't tell me about that. Or Naomi, not Ruth. Naomi would have said, don't tell me that, because God has been bad to me. God has done me bad. And so she's in a situation where she just is lonely, I guess. And she heard, though, through somebody there in Moab, that things were better back over in Bethlehem now, that the Lord had provided bread for the people. And so she decided that what I need to do is go back home. And so she decides to start on her journey home. Now, it was a custom. We're not told this exactly. And by the way, Ruth is a short book. It's four chapters long. You can read it in 15 or 20 minutes. Take time this afternoon to read the whole book, because I'm talking about what's in the book now. So you can go back and look at it if you want to and read this whole story. But anyway, she had heard about things being good back there. So it was a custom for, you know, if you had friends that you were living with and they moved to another area, you would walk part of the way with them. And I don't know for sure, but it seems like that was what was happening here in this situation. Ruth's two daughters-in-law started the journey with her back home, Orpah and Ruth. And so after they'd walked for a time, it seems like, Naomi, probably they got to the county line or the state country line border. And she tells these girls, you know, you need to go back home to your parents or to your husband's parents and pray that God will be good to you, because you've been good to your husband and the dead that have died. And so go back home and make a place for yourself there, because the Lord's hand has gone against me. But they said, no, we'll keep on going with you. Well, they kissed one another and wept together, but they said, we're going to go on with you. But then Naomi kept trying to encourage them, you know, you need to go back home. And Orpah, she decides, well, she will return and go home. But Ruth clave to Naomi, it says. And in verse 16 of the first chapter of Ruth, Ruth makes a statement to Naomi that has become a rather famous statement and probably used in thousands of weddings. I know I've used it myself. But it was Ruth talking to her mother-in-law, Naomi. And here's what she said. You've heard this. "Entreat me not to leave thee or return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." Now I want you to notice that Ruth's devotion is not just to Naomi, but it's also to the Jewish faith as well. And Ruth is an example of how we can really honor our mothers. But notice that Ruth is talking to her mother-in-law. Mother-in-laws are sort of left out a lot of times in this idea of honoring mothers. And there are a lot of mother figures in our lives, and our mother-in-laws are mother figures. Now, I know that mother-in-laws have a lot of, sort of, in my opinion, cruel jokes told about them. And they're sort of joked about and a lot of times not honored like they ought to be honored. I don't know about you men that are here today, but I had a good mother-in-law, one that was worthy of honor. She was the kind of woman that you would love to have as a mother and ought to be honored. And Ruth really became the example of how we can honor mothers today. And stop and think about it just for a minute. Ruth didn't want what was back at home with her parents and even her family back there. She wanted to be able to enjoy being with Naomi, and not only enjoy being with her, but she also wanted what Naomi had to offer through her God, not the gods of the Moabites. And Ruth saw something in Naomi that Naomi didn't see in herself, really. Naomi, all she could see was the hardship that God's hand had made against her. But Naomi looked at her, Ruth looked at her faith beyond that idea of just Naomi. She saw Naomi's God as well. Now, I don't know, Naomi must have been a tremendous example to Ruth to cause Ruth to want to live for the God that Ruth lived for, that Naomi lived for. You know, we need to love our moms no matter how they feel about themselves, and honor them and give yourself to Jesus, because giving yourself to him will make something out of you that you ought to be and make your mom proud. Now, I don't know a whole lot about Ruth in terms of her background and that kind of thing, but I think that she was probably a young woman, because in chapter 2 of the book of Ruth, she's referred to as a damsel. Now, damsel was generally referred to as a young, unmarried woman. But during her marriage to Mahon, which was the son of Naomi and Eliab, she didn't have any children. And so she was childless, and it was now just her and Ruth together, and they were heading back to the city of Bethlehem. Now, when they get back to Bethlehem, all the people that are there in Bethlehem, they see her and they say, "Is this not Ruth, the husband of Elimelech?" I think I said Eliab a while ago. I didn't mean to say that. Elimelech was her husband's name. And, of course, that was true. And they got back there in Bethlehem just at the time that the barley season had started, and the reapers were reaping barley. And Naomi and Ruth had come back sort of empty-handed. And Ruth knew that it would be good if she could go out and gather some of the barley, glean the barley, as she called it. And she even told Naomi that, let me go and glean barley for us, and perhaps one of those gleaners, one of the men that's gleaning barley, they may look upon me in a kindly way. And so Naomi told her to go ahead and do that. And so Ruth went out to begin gleaning barley. You know, it's amazing how God's plans work out. But she happened to start gleaning barley on a particular man's field that was a rather wealthy man, and not only that, he was kinfolk with Elimelech, Naomi's husband. And she came back home that night after being there, and Naomi said, well, where did you glean barley today? And she said, well, it was in the field of Boaz, and he talked to me kindly. He was good to me. In fact, Boaz told her not to go to any of these other fields because, being a Moabite woman, some of these other people may mistreat her. And so you keep gleaning in this field. And Naomi said, you know, that's one of our kin folks. And he not only was just, he was a wealthy man. And so in a little while, in a few days, it was time for the winnowing of the barley. And Naomi, the Jews had a way of, the women had a way of letting the man know, hey, I'm available. And so Naomi talked to her about how she needed to court Boaz. And she went through all of that, and Boaz eventually decided that he would redeem her. And the way this was going to happen is because Elimelech had died and Boaz was a next of kin, then it was the next of kin's job to buy that parcel of land that Elimelech had left when he left to go over to Moab, to buy that land. And in buying the land, he would also be getting Ruth as a part of that as well. But there was one thing bad. There was one man a little closer to Elimelech than Boaz. And so he said, I've got to be sure that that person doesn't want to buy the land instead of me. Well, as it turned out, the other man didn't want to buy the land because he didn't want to have to marry Ruth, a Moabite woman, because he said, that'll mess up my inheritance, so you go ahead and buy the land. And so all of it happened that Boaz bought the land, and eventually buying the land, it made Ruth his as well. So the two married as a result of all that. Now, it's interesting when you look at this, Ruth took the time to be guided totally by Naomi. You know, we don't need to be afraid to ask godly moms, and in this situation, a mother-in-law, for advice on how life should be lived. Now, I know that sometimes we, especially you young people, we have a couple of them over here, sometimes you think your mom and dad don't know anything. You know, they just don't understand. But you know, you might be surprised if you listen to how much wisdom they might have, because they have sometimes, and all of us old folks can remember, that they have more wisdom than we sometimes realize whenever we're just young. Because I know when you're young, you think that you think you know it all. I thought I knew it all. I thought I knew more than anybody else. But sometimes that's not the case. Older people might know a little bit more. But toward the end of the book, Ruth and Boaz marry. And it's interesting how all this plays out, because one day Ruth is with the women of Bethlehem. Now, one thing Ruth had told the women earlier, when she came back in, they were talking about Naomi this and Naomi that. Naomi's name meant pleasantness or sweetness. And Naomi said to him, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Why? Mara means bitterness. She said, I'm bitter because of the way God has treated me. Have you ever known someone? I have, and know someone right now that I can think of in my mind. That some things have happened that are not good to her. Like that happened to Naomi that wasn't good to her. And God is responsible, they say. God doesn't do that to you. God doesn't make things like that happen bad to you unless you're bad yourself. Sometimes your own thing that you do make things bad for you. But anyway, she wanted to be called bitter instead of pleasant because she was bitter. But look what happened. Ruth and Boaz had a little baby boy. And one day, Naomi's got the little baby holding in her hands. And some of the women say to her, say, you know, your daughter-in-law who loves you is worth more to you than seven sons. The number seven was a complete number, you remember, among the Jews. You couldn't have had it any better, even if you was complete in everything as far as your sons. She had earlier told him, I went out from here full and came back empty. But all of a sudden, here's these women telling her, your daughter-in-law is worth more to you than being complete with a house full of sons. How much better could you get it? Well, how much better could you get it, Ruth? Because think what happened. She thought God's back had been turned on her. Now she's blessed with this, not really her truly bloodline grandbaby, but in a sense her grandbaby through this daughter-in-law. Through the relationship she'd had with a kinfolk, Boaz, a baby is born. What'd they name the baby? His name was Obed. You know who Obed was? Obed was the father of Jesse. Well, do you know who Jesse was? Oh, Jesse was a pretty important daddy. Jesse was the father of David. You know, if you go on down through the descendants one after the other, you know who finally was born as a descendant of David? The very Son of God himself. Naomi, things are not so bad after all. Look what's happened through all of these troubles that you've gone through. This daughter-in-law of yours has married a man. Oh, there's something about that man, though, too, that had a sort of a bad spot in his situation. You know who his mama was? Boaz's mama was a harlot. Her name was Rahab. And even a Moabite woman, a woman of Jericho. Not only that, but all the way back to Judah. You remember what happened with him and a Canaanite woman by the name of Tamra? Perez was born. And here's three people in the bloodline of Christ that were not Jews. They were foreigners. But in all of this, Christ was born. Now, the book of Ruth, let me just mention this as we're running down to closing time. The book of Ruth could just as easily have been titled Boaz. Boaz's name's mentioned more in it than Ruth's name's mentioned. And there's something about Boaz that has a lot of resemblance to the Son of God himself. Because you see, several times the word redeemer is used in talking about Boaz. He could redeem the piece of property which also redeemed Ruth. And by being the redeemer of this situation, you look at all of this whole story, and it sort of looks like a situation where the Israelites, sort of being a symbol of the Israelites, going off and forsaking God, being taken into a far country themselves, away from God, and then coming back home to God through Jesus Christ himself, and being able, Christ, to redeem the whole world, both Jew and Gentile. And it seems as though the redemption of Ruth, a Moabitish woman, and I think it may have had some effect on Boaz because he knew who his mother was. And it made him look favorably upon Ruth. And now here, Boaz is sort of redeeming Ruth in the same way that Christ would redeem the world. And you know, when you think about what happened with Ruth, all of this story about Ruth happened in a little town of Bethlehem. You know where David was born? A little town of Bethlehem. You know where Christ was born? A little town of Bethlehem. All of it happened in Bethlehem. You know, there's many wonderful, faithful, godly people in the Bible, and especially godly moms. But above all, Ruth shows how our faith ought to be toward mother-in-laws and how that we can honor even mother-in-laws on Mother's Day or any other time of the year. And we don't know how things are going to turn out. We don't have the ability to look into the future. Ruth had no idea what was going to happen, or Naomi had no idea about what was going to happen in the future. But we do know this, that God can take pain and suffering and even death and use it to bring about something great. I don't know what would have happened if Elimelech had lived and two boys had lived. Probably they would have stayed down there in Moab. But you see, it almost looks like God had some plans in the life of Naomi, and especially in the life of Ruth, to bring her and Boaz together and to make it to be a part of his plan to bring his son to earth. And what we need to be thinking about more than anything is what we do in relationship to Christ today. We need to love him, honor him, and we need to obey him and become a child of God, a Christian if we're not. And if we haven't been living like we ought to live, it's time that we do, because Christ is coming again and we need to be ready. If you're not ready, today's a good time to get ready. Anytime's a good time, but especially today, because we're going to sing a song in just a minute. And you can go right back here and get dressed and go into the watery grave of baptism to be baptized and raised to walk in newness of life. Or if you haven't been living like you ought to live, get your life right today by coming and letting us pray with you. God loves you. God's waiting with open arms to receive you home.